Hey, everybody, welcome to this week's NASDAQ Dorsey Wright podcast. This is Will, as you can tell by my boyish voice, as I've been told. I have Ethan Hopp, first time podcast guest, and also our summer intern. Conveniently, National Intern Day, which we just found out he's getting his face blasted across the Times Square, New York building.
Yep.
So, Ethan, solid worker. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're going to get to know Ethan a bit today. He also has a cool summer project that he's been working on for us. So some of you listening will probably be interested in what his findings are. But before we get to that, we can back up and be like, how'd you find us? Like, how do we get connected? You're in college right now. What are you studying? Just a high level intro.
Yeah, so I'm from Richmond, Virginia. I'm going into my senior year at Hampton Sydney College, studying economics and business. And I really heard about the internship through Darren Long. We had a pre-business trip up to New York, and we actually visited NASDAQ headquarters. And Darren was there showing us around, and he kind of gave us the rundown of Dorsey Wright and told us about what he did.
And he's an alum of
alum. So that's kind of where I first, you know, kind of heard about Dorsey Wright. And I'm on the student investment fund at Hampton Sydney. And there we do a lot of fundamental analysis when we're looking at equities that we're choosing. But Darren gave us access to the platform on Dorsey Wright. And that's kind of where I started to learn more about technical analysis and how that can be applicable to our fund, and kind of where I garner my interest for, you know, maybe this internship.
Yeah. I remember, I think Miles and I came to Hampton Sydney too. And I think I remember you being in the class, like second row in the corner.
Yeah.
Or something, if I'm being like real specific, but yeah, I remember you being in there. Back to Hampton Sydney. For those that aren't familiar, I thought I wanted to play college soccer. So I did a lot of college tours and visits and stuff like that. And Hampton Sydney was one of the schools that they wanted me to play soccer at. So I went there a number of times. Total student body is like 1,200.
Less than 900.
900?
Yeah.
So pretty unique environment, first of all. But I did not know the alumni network is as strong as it was. Like, I went to Christopher Newport. So again, just a no-name state school for most people, but Sydney, given how small it is, the alumni network is way stronger than I would have expected. Like Darren, the New York trip that you guys went on. So seems like a good place to study business and finance.
Yeah, definitely. They definitely do well with connecting current students to alumni. They definitely market that pretty well.
Yeah.
They always talk about how good the alumni network is there.
I've seen it for sure now. So that's great. I was going to double down on your student investment fund experience, because I've talked about owls in our student investment fund at CNU for pretty much the whole time that I was in college. Miles was another guy on our team. He was in the student investment fund. Our new hire, Trevor, he was also in the student investment fund. So there is that seems to be a pretty good leg to get yourself into the door. And then internships, I know when we're interviewing people, that's a huge little leg up. They have like a demonstrated experience and interest with investing, and like undergraduate investment clubs are a huge add to resumes. But similarly, we were fundamental only, long only, which is fair. They don't want students going short, using leverage and stuff. But yeah, we're long only, fundamental. And I remember we're talking with your group having like the same issues of like when to sell something. Because fundamentally, it's tough to say like, oh, this is it, this is it. But then technically, we talked about it, and it helped our fund too, just having some like objective rules, looking at the charts, which is something that we didn't do. So that was a big benefit when I was an intern, like going back to my fund.
Yeah, that's what I'm, since y'all at CNU had, you know, kind of a line going through Dorsey Wright, kind of had some experience. I really look forward to going back. I already talked to our general manager for next year, got a list of our holdings right now, and hopefully be able to teach some of the guys some of the things I've learned and maybe apply it to the way we manage the fund. But
sweet.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think my experience on the fund is probably the most important thing I've learned so far in college. Just having that experience, doing it on my own, having it be completely student run.
Cool.
Definitely beneficial.
Cool. So I figured, like I said earlier, I think our clients would be interested in what you've been doing for us this summer. I can tee it up a little bit. For those that you know, we have models on our platform. They're either ETF models, stock models, mutual fund models, a mix of both that are rules-based. They're buying and selling positions based off of relative strength. So the best performing names get added. It's classic kind of momentum type models. There's like over 100 of them. So we get a lot of questions about what are the best models. People just sort year-to-date performance often than not and just go with the top one, which I would not recommend. Time in the strategies are always better than the time in the strategies. But nonetheless, we get questions and people will say, like, how suitable is this strategy for a client's account who's taxable? So they're paying taxes on every trade they make. Or how suitable is this for a retirement account? And before the summer, we really couldn't say for certainty. We had turnover metrics, but we couldn't say like, oh, this model's very trade efficient. It's realizing mostly long-term gains relative to losses. Like we couldn't say that. But fortunately, you've been doing a lot of work this summer to help us answer that question. So without getting too in the weeds, I know you're working on your final presentation now and doing the paper write-up. What's like the high level summary takeaway, like your approach for your project?
Yeah. So when kind of starting with the project, what we did was go through all the trade data, back tested all the way through the inception of the model.
For like a sample of the most popular
models. Yeah. So I think it was like 9 of them that were the most popular, and really trying to find a way to simply score how efficient that model was at taking long-term gains. So I think the formula we ended up going with is the percent of gains that are long-term that are realized as a whole of of the total gains. So the scores from 0 to 1, 0 being the least efficient at taking
all short-term
gains. That's all short-term gains.
Higher tax
and
rate.
Then, then a 1 would be you're only taking long-term gains, which is obviously the best. But obviously the scores are going in between 0 and 1. And it kind of just gives you a rough, you know, visual on how efficient that model is at taking long-term gains. It's been pretty cool kind of going through all the different variations of, we've tried, I don't know how many different.
We've tried a lot of different variations.
There's a lot of different scores, but they kind of all gave the same picture. They all kind of showed like, that model is going to be the best scoring. Mm-hmm. But we finally landed on something and hopefully that can get implemented onto the models page and be some additional information for advisors to look at when they're making the decision.
Yeah, I know personally I would use it to see if I were to want to follow one of our own strategies, does it make sense to put in my taxable account? Because I don't want to be paying much short-term cap gains if I can avoid it. Now, obviously, if you're paying capital gains, you're making money, which is a good sign. But like you said, if you can get that score closer to 1, most gains are realized. That's definitely more preferable. Something else, too, about the project that I'd be curious your thoughts on, or at least your understanding coming into it. Because with momentum and trend following, we know that it takes a lot of short-term losses. And if something performs really well, it's not going to kick it out until later. So in theory, it should be tax efficient, trade efficient by realizing a bunch of short-term losses and taking long-term gains. And you found that for most of our models, that's typically the case. Like the scores are maybe higher than you would think. If you just look at turnover, you would think, oh, this thing's atrocious to follow. But then if you look at like how you scored it, and we're not being too biased here, but it's a pretty fair scoring system. If you look at how you scored it, it's, I guess, kind of surprising that they're more trade efficient than you would think.
Yeah, I think when you go through the models and kind of look at the percent of trades that were either short term or long term, you see that a vast majority of the trades are short term losses or short term gains. But when you look at those average returns for those short term trades, they're a lot lower, obviously, than the long term. So a lot of the short-term losses that are getting kicked off will get eaten up by the long-term gains that you're realizing. And in doing so, you're going to be only realizing long-term gains. So
sweet.
I think when you look at that distribution of kind of kicking out your losses as soon as possible, And then holding on to your winners for a long time, it definitely creates that more efficient scoring. But I think we did, there's definitely some models we looked at, especially the ones that are more cutthroat with kicking out holdings.
Yeah.
You can kind of see that when you don't let the system kind of play out, it kind of just kicks it out the moment it reverses back down.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of fall into maybe some less efficient
right.
models just by kind of staying in short term losses and gains and not letting anything play out over a long run.
Because we know that those shorter term models can still perform well, but it's just, hey, this will be better suited in a tax advantage, deferred tax, Roth type of account and not a taxable account.
Exactly.
So trying to help people make better sense of that. And I think your project's going to do a great job of that. I know you're wrapping that up now. So again, for people who have questions and want to see it, definitely reach out to us. He's done a great job with it. All right, different topic, and maybe towards the end of the conversation, when we were interviewing you, you brought up how you were really interested in being a financial advisor, which is, I'm going to outright say, like, surprising, because most 20-year-old people in undergraduate school don't work in finance, like, think they want to work finance, don't say they want to be an advisor. Like, they want to go work the high finance, private equity, venture, banking, equity research. Not many people want to go be an advisor for a number of reasons I could list, but what made you interested and what do you think kind of pulls you toward that career path?
I think I love building relationships with people, and obviously being a financial advisor, you're helping people reach their goals and helping them fulfill their dreams. And I think I would find a lot of joy in helping people do that. While also staying, you know, in the industry and staying within finance, I think it would be a good mix of, you know, relationship building, but also, you know,
managing
money, bridging the gap.
Yeah.
It's something I've kind of always been interested in, money management. No one in my family really works in finance, but I opened up an account like right when I turned 18 and just been pretty interested in investing ever since. So I think for me personally, I think the field as a whole would suit me pretty well. So
I can see that too after working with you for the summer. And I think it's a great time to get into advising, because the average advisor age is, I'll say, high.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of young people are interested. And those people will either have to sell their practices or transition that down to the next generation. So I think it's a good time, demographically speaking, to be into it. And also baby boomers phasing out, millennials coming up into wealth. I mean, there's a lot of tailwinds for the industry. So I think it's a good time to be into it. I think your experience here is definitely going to help in that regard, given that advisors are our clients. And you've gotten to chat with a bunch of them already, maybe more. We'll chat with you as well after the podcast, maybe. Reach out to Ethan.
Yeah, no, talking to different people that utilize the platform a lot, I've already realized how useful
it can be.
Yeah, and kind of definitely getting some ideas as to what direction to go next. But definitely my experience here has given me, you know, a good baseline knowledge for the next step.
Cool.
Future. So
cool. Well, I would be remiss if I didn't bring this up on the podcast. Some things I've learned about Ethan this summer. Loves food. I think he's tried every restaurant in Scott's Edition. Went to Wawa Hoagie Fest for the first time, right?
That was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Great golfer. I think we also played the worst golf course each of I have ever played together last week.
That was it was interesting last time we played. It was
should have worn boots out there.
Yeah, it was a dog track, but we all played pretty well. It was fun.
You played well. You played well. I first three holes I was fine, and then I lost for the next six. But great golfer. Have your own bowling ball and bowling shoes.
I
learned that's your like wintertime activity at Hampton Sydney.
Yeah, I mean, I love to golf, but sometimes it gets too cold. I had to find something else to do.
Bowling.
So bowling it is, and Farmville has some great bowling deals, so it's actually pretty popular out there. It's hard to get a lane.
Oh my gosh.
Everybody's there. So yeah, bowling and golf. Those are my two hobbies.
Your two hobbies?
Outside of work.
That's awesome. Well-rounded guy. Great work in here. Good guy to hang out with outside of the office too, which is, I think, so much of it. Like when we're interviewing people, people meet like technical skills and they have a great background and experience and whatnot. A lot of the interviews are just, can we hang out with this person for 40 hours a week? Like that's a lot of interviews, I feel like, these days. So that goes a long way.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, cool. I think that's good background on Ethan. What he's doing for this summer. Appreciate you guys all tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.